Along with Edward R. Murrow, he practically invented broadcast journalism. William L. Shirer with BookBeat. I'm Don Swaim. It was not all glamour being a newspaper correspondent in the Europe of the 1930s, especially when you were out of a job. Shirer had been fired by the Chicago Tribune, and then the old Universal News Service folded. But one day in Berlin in 1937, Shirer got a telegram from a man who worked for CBS, Edward R. Murrow.
I had heard of Ed, but of course I never met him. And my first reaction was, he's one of these VIPs coming into Berlin, and he wants to pick the brains of us correspondents who are there to make a talk. I thought, well, we'll have a drink anyway and a meal, and that's it.
But Murrow offered Shirer a job.
Ed said, gee, there's one condition, forgot to tell you. Bill Paley and the brass at CBS will want to hear your voice.
Shirer wasn't sure what kind of voice he had, but he made a trial broadcast from a studio in Berlin.
And I remember when we got there to do this, I was nervous. And the microphone was standing about 7 feet high. I saw some old piano boxes in the corner, and we rolled one of those out, and we climbed up on top of that.
Shirer says CBS decided his voice was lousy, but that it would do, so he was hired. But ironically,
Ed said, oh, there's one thing I also forgot to tell you. Neither you or I are allowed to speak on the air. I couldn't believe him. Why did you hire me? You said you need an experienced foreign correspondent that knew a few languages and had been around. Well, he said, that's a CBS rule. You and I get other people to talk on the air.
But that rule came to an end when Hitler's troops marched into Vienna. William L. Shirer was an eyewitness to the catastrophic events of the 1930s and writes about them in his memoir, The Nightmare Years. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. In the late 1930s in Europe, William L. Shirer had yet to write such remarkable works of journalism as Berlin Diary and The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Shirer was working for CBS and Edward R. Murrow, but neither was allowed to go on the air.
Ed and I wasted our time putting on children's broadcasts and bad concerts and that sort of thing. And then, of course, Hitler marched into Vienna, where I was at the moment. I flew to London because the Nazis wouldn't let me broadcast. And Ed and I just went on the air that night. And nobody here in New York complained. And that's how we broke that ban.
Even though NBC was dominant at the time with its two networks, the red and the blue, it was CBS, thanks to Murrow and Shirer, which fulfilled radio's potential in broadcast journalism.
We were working in a new field. Radio had not done much in journalism, as you know. An announcer sat in New York and read copy off of an AP ticker. And Ed, who had an uncanny feeling for the new medium, and I, who'd had more experience in journalism, he had just come over. We sort of teamed up, and I must say it was a lot of fun because it was absolutely new.
Shirer says covering the early years of World War II was tough because recordings were not allowed to be played on the air.
In some ways, you know, radio did not do the job it could have done as a new medium because we couldn't record. I remember there was a big tank battle, for example, in the Battle of France in June 40. I couldn't carry a microphone up there. I could get within hearing distance. It was a magnificent sound, which radio depended on in those days. So the Germans offered me their recordings that the Army had made. CBS wouldn't take them.
Something to do with the Musicians Union, which was afraid that using recordings on the air would throw its members out of work. As Europe began to blaze in the 1930s, William L. Shirer was there and writes of that era in his second volume of memoirs, The Nightmare Years. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. The late 1930s, Hitler got his way and war raged throughout Europe. William L. Shirer and Edward R. Murrow were covering it for CBS. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. Shirer, who writes about his career as a foreign correspondent in the Nightmare Years, says CBS then had a policy. No recordings were to be used on the air. Shirer says that was especially hard on Murrow, who wanted to broadcast with the sounds of the Battle of Britain in the background.
He would have 3 or 4 minutes on evening news, and he'd go up on top of a building to record the Germans, and those would be the 3 or 4 minutes that there were no planes, no bombs falling, no sirens, no sound. And I think towards the end, I think I can say that safely now, both Ed and I cheated a little bit.
Shirer says he was never certain his live news broadcasts were being heard in the U.S. until later when he would get a telegram from the CBS news director, Paul White.
Working from particularly from the continent of Europe, we didn't have what you call a feedback. For example, I would be broadcasting from Cologne at 4 o'clock in the morning because of the difference in time, and just start on a queue, and not knowing whether I got through or not, maybe 2 or 3 days later I'd get a cable from Paul White saying, sorry, but we couldn't get you sunspots.
Neither Shirer nor Murrow were shy about explaining their problems to the man who ran CBS, William Paley.
CBS was a small organization. So when Ed and I came back from Europe, we would had access to Paley's office. We'd walk right in and air our complaints about how lousy conditions were for our work, and he would even listen to us. It was an awfully good relationship in which we felt that the man who made most of the decisions was in touch with us and understood what we were doing.
William L. Shirer. If Edward R. Murrow was the father of broadcast journalism, much the same can be said of Shirer, who blazed the trail, now followed by the rest of us. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. The war in Europe was made vivid to Americans through the CBS radio broadcast of Edward R. Murrow and William L. Shirer. Murrow is dead, but Shirer, now past 80, is still writing, the author of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, Berlin Diary, and The Nightmare Years, his life as a European correspondent from 1930 to 1940. One day in 1940, William Paley, who ran CBS, phoned Shirer in London and asked that he line up Winston Churchill for a radio talk.
I said, how much? And Paley said, $50. I said, $50? Well, he said, explain to Mr. Churchill that it will not be a commercial program. It will not be sponsored. And I'm sure he doesn't want his piece sponsored by some company in America. So I called Churchill up. I got him at the House of Commons, and he said, sure, I'll talk, but how much? And I said, $50, and there was a long silence.
Shirer says Paley never did up the ante, and CBS never got Churchill. Shirer first saw Hitler at a Nazi party rally in Nuremberg in 1934.
My first sight surprised me because he seemed rather flabby, not a strong face, waving, sort of flapping his hands and that sort of thing. And the contrast between his rather unimportant look and bearing and the delirious reception of the crowd amazed me and confounded me, because I couldn't figure out how they would be shouting deliriously at a figure like that.
But Shirer says Hitler did have a charisma and a grasp of communication.
His hold on the German people was simply so uncanny when you stop to think of it, that it lasted until the very end, with the whole country going down to ruin.
William L. Shirer, an eyewitness to The Nightmare Years, the title of a second volume of memoirs published by Little Brown. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim. Born in Chicago in 1904, William L. Shirer now lives in Lenox, Massachusetts, turning out such graphic glimpses of history as The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, 20th Century Journal, and his book of memoirs, The Nightmare Years, 1930 to 1940.
I'm kidded and sometimes scolded by my family and my secretary for never throwing anything away. And I was thinking as I was doing this book, what a lucky break that was, because I found I had about 50 packing cases. I had my diaries, my dispatches, my broadcasts, newspaper clippings, letters.
But Shirer admits his papers were in disarray.
I had two secretaries working on them for years, actually, trying to get some sort of order. And at the end, I did miss two or three things that showed up after the book went to print, but 99% of the stuff is there.
In The Nightmare Years, William L. Shirer not only writes of the violent events of the period, but of episodes in his own life. The skiing accident that led to the loss of an eye, his wife's illness, his days working for CBS Radio.
I think the principal aim in writing this book, The Nightmare Years, was to give an account of how it was to live in those times, and not to recount history, which I've already done in some of my books. But I never had a chance to really write about how it was to live in those times, try and have a family life. I think when we read the papers or listen to the radio or television and hear these correspondents from abroad, we don't realize that they're people, persons, who have wives and children and have some kind of a life to lead. and what it was to live in those really nightmare years.
William L. Shirer, who along with Edward R. Murrow virtually created broadcast journalism. With BookBeat, I'm Don Swain.